Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thank you, Pete. Much appreciated. Welcome back. Final hour of Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Kevin Kugler, for years, has been heard on Westwood One's radio broadcasts of NFL games, and this year he's now on Fox Calls. His partner is Chris Spielman. They have drawn the assignment of the Cleveland Browns and Washington football this weekend in Ohio, and Kevin, kind enough to hop on with us here on Grant and Danny. First of all, Kevin, so many years doing the radio calls of the NFL, what have these first couple of weeks on the Fox TV calls been like for you with Chris?
Yeah, it's been fun. I've had a good time with it. Chris is a good dude. We've worked together before, so that helps when you're trying to build chemistry in a new booth. It's made it a little bit easier. Laura Oakman's on the field. I've worked with Laura for a long time on the radio side. So it's been a nice, smooth transition so far. And, you know, look, after 5.5 months of pandemic-induced layoff, basically, I'm happy to be working. I'd have worked with about anybody, but I'm really happy to be working with two good people.
Kevin, during your study here leading up to this game, what's jumped out at you when you watch Washington? What have you seen?
Well, the defensive line jumps out at me first because Chase Young jumps out at me and jumps out at everybody else that he's playing against. And I had the fortune of watching him play throughout his college career, calling games on the Big Ten Network when he was at Ohio State. So it surprises me not at all that Chase Young has been able to dominate at this level because he's just a fantastic player. For Washington also, I'm anxious to see, can this secondary finally start to get healthy? You know, you didn't get what you wanted right out of the gates with Kendall Fuller being inactive in the first couple of games with the knee. If you can get him back into the mix, I think that shores up that secondary a little bit more for Washington and gives them a much better look on the back end of that defense.
Kevin Kugler on Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan, the big one, brought to you by your local Honda dealer. It's time to get your local Honda dealer for model year clearance pricing. See your local Honda dealer today. How about the offense for Washington? Terry McLaurin's outstanding. I'm sure he surprises you when you watch him. But what about Dwayne Haskins? What have you thought about their struggles so far on that side of the ball?
Well, maybe I'm a little optimistic, but I tend to cut a little bit of slack because, to me, this is really his first year as a regular starter in a new system in this league. And we forget because we get to this level and we see guys that are dominant. And Dwayne Haskins started 1 year at Ohio State. I love the kid. I think he's a fantastic talent. I just am anxious to see him continue to grow in this role. And one of the things, you know, you read about this in all of the preseason stuff, that this was going to be a year where you could use the backs out of the backfield in the passing game a little bit more. And we really haven't seen that much of that yet. I would be anxious to see if you can get Antonio Gibson, if you can get J.D. McKissic, who's been very good as a receiving back out of the backfield in his young career. I'd like to see if you can get him a little more involved as the season goes along from a pass game standpoint, because I think those are both weapons you can use out of the backfield in the pass game.
This defense has been good, but it's been asked to do probably too much, Kevin. Is that kind of your assessment as well? I know you're more optimistic about the offense than maybe some folks here are, but this defense seems to need to be getting put in so many bad spots. I think that's kind of what's going to end up undoing them. They've got to be heroes like they were in week one. Speak to this matchup here specifically with Cleveland. Can they do some of what they did in week one against a better Cleveland offensive front?
And that's the challenge that you have this week, because you know Cleveland's going to go out and try to establish the run. That's what they've been able to do in the first two games, even in their loss to the Ravens. They got a run game going a little bit there. They certainly got it going last Thursday night against Cincinnati, and that's the big challenge for this Washington defense. And I don't disagree with you. They have been put in some difficult positions, and I think they've performed admirably considering some of the positions they've been put in. But their challenge this week is to stop a Cleveland offense that I think has more upside than what we've seen so far from them. You've got two of the best wide receivers in the game in Beckham and Landry. You've got a tight end in Austin Hooper that has put up big numbers in his career, just hasn't gotten going yet, and I'm anxious to see if that's something that we'll start to see this week. And then how do you argue with the Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt combo in the backfield? These guys are not only good carrying the ball, they're good carrying tacklers. Two of the top six guys in the league in yards after contact. And that's something I know Washington will be very concerned about this week, is you got to bring them down initially and early, because they're going to continue to get yardage after you hit them if you don't tackle sure right at the first point of contact.
Hey, Kevin, the Browns are a team that I still feel like I have no idea after two games what they are, because they were going to lose to the Ravens, and albeit they lost worse than I thought, that happened. And they should beat the Bengals, and maybe it was a little closer than it could have or should have been, but they did. So, do we really know what they are yet? I feel like there's just so many precincts still reporting on that team, so to speak.
No, I would agree. I don't think we know. Honestly, I don't think either one of these teams is completely baked in yet. And it's only two games into the season, so that makes sense. But I don't know what this Cleveland defense is. They missed Greedy Williams, certainly, and they think they're going to have him back this week. They miss Mac Wilson. They think they're going to have him back this week, so they get a little bit of help on that defensive side of the ball. But, you know, how much does that Ravens loss skew what we think of Cleveland? I mean, it was an ugly game. Baltimore looked great. Cleveland couldn't do anything to stop anybody. They were terrible in that game. The offense couldn't get on track. And then last Thursday against Cincinnati, they looked a lot better, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Baker Mayfield looked better. The run game was really going strong. I don't know what this Cleveland team is, and I'm still not sure exactly what this Washington team is. It sounds to me like, from what you guys say, there's a little more pessimism in the area as far as what Washington is right now. But, you know, we're two games in. I'm anxious to see what this game looks like. I think it's a very competitive ball game because you have so many question marks about both of these teams.
Talk to me about some of the teams that you've already seen here. Arizona, San Francisco, we've gotten a look at them, at Arizona rather, up close and personal, and this kind of looks like the coronation for the Kyler Murray is a great quarterback type season. That tour goes on. What'd you see from San Francisco, though? A Super Bowl hangover, some injuries, kind of concerned about that group.
Yeah, they were a little bit flat in that opening game. I didn't think they came out with the same energy as Arizona did, and it showed in that game. Now, what hurt them was George Kittle getting hurt. You know, you take George Kittle out, that's a pretty pedestrian group of wide receivers that surround that San Francisco team. And if you don't have George Kittle to offset a lot of that and get those guys in single matchups, it becomes a real challenge. And while Kittle played in the second half, he was only out there as a decoy. And they figured it out very quickly that George Kittle couldn't do much on that knee. And so you don't have George Kittle, that hurts a ton. And I don't know what this San Francisco team is going to be moving forward. The injuries that they suffered last week were numerous and significant to key members of that team, like Bosa and Mostert, two guys that, man, you just hate to lose if you're a 49ers fan. I don't know what that team is right now, but they are not even the same team I saw in week one where they were flat. It's going to be a real difficult challenge moving forward for San Francisco in what I think is the best division in football this year. The NFC West is stacked. Rams, I had them last week against Philadelphia. They look a lot better. Seattle, of course, is Seattle. And you mentioned Arizona and Kyler Murray and getting DeAndre Hopkins, which has just made such a giant difference for the growth of that young quarterback. I think Arizona's got a real good chance to be 3-0 after this weekend when they play the Lions before they hit the road east for two games against Carolina and the Jets.
Kevin Kugler on the call, Fox, 1 o'clock. Make sure you're watching him this weekend, joining us on Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. You just mentioned getting to call that Rams-Eagles game. So Sean McVay looks like he's dialed in, calling plays. Jared Goff has responded well start of the year to his slow 2019 campaign. And, man, we saw the Eagles in week one. I don't know what you thought last week, but Carson Wentz stunk in the first game of the season. He's really been disappointing, and it's not all his fault. They got a bad offensive line situation. But talk about two teams in very different reasons going in different directions who have not been what we expected.
Eagles are right now barely treading water, and they're fortunate the division doesn't appear to be great, so I think they're going to be able to tread water for a while because there's talent there. But, man, this is about as bad a start as you can have for a team that comes back with a veteran quarterback that has some talent around him. Not a great start. Now, I question a lot of their wide receiver core. I'm not real sure how great that wide receiver core is right now. I think Jalen Reagor has the chance to be a real talent, but he's a rookie. And, you know, you're counting on a rookie to come in and essentially be your number one or number two. That's a hard ask. Meanwhile, for the Rams, without Todd Gurley, their run game seems better. They've got Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp, who do almost everything you need to do, and they've got an underrated tight end group. So Jared Goff's got a lot of weapons to work with, as does Sean McVay when he's calling the plays. Goff seems to be really on his game to start this season. And you know what's funny? No preseason shouldn't have impacted the Rams at all, because Sean McVay, since he took over as Rams head coach, has never played his starters in preseason games. Didn't believe in it.
Yeah.
So they didn't. It didn't matter to them that they didn't have preseason. They don't ever play anyway. So for everybody else who's trying to get their bearings, these guys have always had a plan in place to start the season off on a good note without their guys playing in preseason. And I think that's not. I'm not hearing too many people talk about that. And I think that's a really underrated aspect of a fast start for a team like the Rams. This is no different for them than any other year.
You mentioned that NFC West, and Kevin Cooler with us on the call this weekend, Washington versus Cleveland. That AFC North is pretty damn good, too. I mean, Cincinnati, we know what they are. It's kind of the Joe Burrow show, and they're going to struggle a little bit. But the Ravens are great. We know that. Pittsburgh has held serve 2-0, though not as impressive maybe as Baltimore through a couple weeks. Where does Cleveland actually fit in that pecking order to you? It's hard to get a great read on them after a couple of weeks.
It really is. I look at the, you know, when you look at them on film and you look at them on paper, especially on the offensive side of the ball, there's a lot to like with this Cleveland team. Now, is it good enough to win the division ahead of Baltimore and Pittsburgh? I don't know if this is the year for that. Baltimore looks great early, and getting Ben back has helped Pittsburgh a ton. Obviously, that goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway because, you know, you guys have time to fill on this show. But the fact that you've got two good running backs with Cleveland, the fact that you've got a couple of superstar wide receivers, and then you've got a guy like Kadarius Hodge who's going to be able to pick up some of the opportunities that are left out there when Beckham and Landry draw so much attention. And I'm telling you right now, Austin Hooper is a Pro Bowl tight end. He's been a Pro Bowl tight end the last couple of years. Having four catches through two games is a really low number. At some point, and I know Washington fans are hoping it's not this weekend, but at some point, Austin Hooper is going to have one of those breakout eight catches, 105-yard, two-touchdown kind of games, because he's good enough to do that, and we've seen that throughout his career. But as far as where they are in the pecking order of that division, I agree with you. It's a good division. I don't, you know, it's hard for me to look at them right now and say they're any better than third in that division until I see what Pittsburgh continues to look like over the next few weeks. Right now, they look to me like they're a little bit better on the defensive side, so I'd probably give them an edge.
Kevin, you've been outstanding for years on Westwood One, and excited to see you getting some run nationally on Fox now as well. Keep up the good work, and we will enjoy your call on Sunday at 1 o'clock.
You will enjoy it, and I'm sure all of Twitter will be very kind, as they always are, to every broadcaster who's doing games.
That's so funny.
Thanks, guys.
So true. Take care. Kevin Kugler on Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. Yeah, if you're calling a game, you might as well just stay off social media. God forbid you at any point for 1 second mess anything up. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan. Next, the Jets, everyone seems to think are the worst team in football, but maybe they're not, and they might have some company in that conversation. Let's get into that on GZ. The Jets seem to be in their own category as the laughing stock in football at 0-2. 28 points they've been outscored by so far this season, but there are other teams in that same vicinity. In fact, there's a team with a worse scoring margin than them. We can get to some of the other really bad teams in football. We've mentioned a few times, though, in the last week that, you know, people seem to really like Sam Darnold for whatever reason, and he's always kind of, you know, been a darling as better than we know, and it's just not his fault and all these things. I will say that last night I was scrolling on Instagram. I don't remember what account it was. He made one of the more incredible throws I've seen in a long, long time in their game against San Francisco. And I hadn't seen this. I'll find it and send it to you, Danny, because I don't know if you've seen it yet. But he basically is, like, scrambling around. He's rolling out to his left, right-handed quarterback, obviously. throwing across his body, drops down three-quarter sidearm David Cone style, like a Matty Stafford throw, and he just puts a ball on a dart into a small window like 20-some yards downfield for a big catch. But it's a great throw. I mean, it's a mm-hmm. play, but it's a play where you see that and you go, well, damn.
Yeah.
That's that. Okay. That's something. I can work with that.
The talent is evident, and I think that's why people – I mean, listen, people decided that he was great before he did anything. I mean, that's unequivocal to me, right? People decided that Sam Darnold was in the accepted quarterback class. They decided that Darnold was really good. The production hasn't matched that. Now, are there reasons for that? Yes, I would argue that. Some people will call them excuses. I call them reasons. I think there's a legit reason that he hasn't been particularly great in terms of putting up numbers. I think that's as awful a situation as there is in the sport. And they got worse this year, by the way. The one guy they had is in Carolina after an off-field DUI and whatever, and Robbie Anderson. Their best weapon is Le'Veon Bell, who's already hurt, and it's Frank Gore 21 times. There's very little going right now for the Jets, aside from Chris Herndon, who I think got like one or two targets as a tight end this past week, letting down
daily
fantasy owners
everywhere. Well,
there's
no doubt what they've done is criminal in terms of the amount of talent that they have, or in this case have not surrounded him with. And he's a year deeper into his career than Dwayne Haskins. I mean, we're having this conversation about Haskins in year two. Imagine fast-forwarding a
right.
year, and we're still screaming about whether or not we can properly evaluate him because he doesn't have anything around him. I mean, that's malpractice. It's unacceptable. It's ridiculous. And people should be fired over that as far as I'm concerned. It's egregious. But they're 0-2. They've been outscored by 28 points. So the exact same resume, by the way, the Philadelphia Eagles, 0-2, outscored by 28 points. And I can make the case pretty easily that the Jets have played a better schedule than Philadelphia with the same record and the same point margin. Washington beat Philadelphia by 10, whatever you think of this football team. And obviously the Rams could be pretty good, but coming into the year, I think a lot of people felt like 9-10 win type team. Doubled them up, whereas the Jets have played the Bills, a favorite in the AFC East, and San Francisco, an NFC champion a year ago, the two teams that they have played to this point. Again, both 0-2, minus 28 in margin. I think people are very, very sleepy right now. They're taking
some
CBD oils and some melatonin or whatever else helps them to sleep. On the Eagles being just so, so bad through two games. It's awful. The Giants are 0-2, but they're only minus 14. The Vikings are just as bad as Philly, just about.
Minus 26, dude.
0-2, minus 26, right there with the Jets and the Eagles. If you're just looking at blind ballots, by the way, like the Jets have scored 58 points. The Eagles have scored 64. The Vikings have scored 45. Oh, you know, I beg your pardon. I'm looking at the defense. So the Jets have only scored 30. The Eagles have scored 36. The Vikings have actually scored way more than both 45. But defensively, they've given up more points than the Jets or the Eagles, and it's not even close.
That's right. Remember week one, Minnesota and Green Bay went back and forth in a shootout. Week two, Minnesota had – they were the worst offense in the league.
Yeah.
With Kirk Cousins throwing a million picks, and they couldn't do anything. And at least they give up a lot of points, too. Only two teams are north of 70 points allowed, and then and number one, of course, the Atlanta Falcons, whose defense is morally questionable. I mean, they're reprehensibly bad. Like, crimes are being committed as to how terrible they are on defense. And Minnesota's in that company.
I want to double-click on a defense being morally reprehensible.
It's so bad, it's criminal, Grant. You understand my point. It's just so awful. People should be jailed for how bad it is.
The bit where you just say you understand my point that I don't understand. I love that.
You get the point.
Danny, how about the Texans? Okay, now they have played the Chiefs and the Ravens, so we
understand.
Yes,
two best teams.
So they get a pass, but if you're just looking at blind resume and not looking at who's played who, they have been outscored by more points than anybody else, 31, and they are 0-2. There are 0-2 teams, by the way, that are nearly even in point margin. They're minus 31. Now, because of who they've played, I'm willing to say right now the Jets are worse. The Eagles are worse. The Vikings are worse. I don't know if I'd say the Giants are worse. It's probably comparable. The Dolphins are worse. But they've got the worst resume in football at this moment, having lost two games and given up 67 while scoring just 36. No one in the league, and they've had to play maybe the two best teams, but no one in the league has had a worse 2 weeks than the Texans as far as results.
Pro Football Reference does these handy little things to try to tell you what's real and what's not. They put these little categories right there. There's stuff called the simple rating system, which basically includes a bunch of math and factors that I don't quite understand, to be honest with you, but smart people do, and they tell you how good the teams are. So the Ravens, very good through a couple of weeks. Kansas City Chiefs, very good through a couple of weeks, etc. The strength of schedule rating basically looks at who you've matched up with when it combines the simple rating system ratings, right? There are only three teams in the NFL north of 10. Jacksonville has played a 10.6 caliber strength of schedule. Denver, a 10.7 strength of schedule caliber. Houston, 16.8. That's more than quadruple some of these teams that are 1-1, 0-2, etc. Houston's got the rawest of the raw deals, and I think they've got a good opponent this week, if memory serves. They might be 0-3 and not be anywhere near as bad as somebody else. Yeah, they play the Steelers.
They're going to be 0-3, barring something crazy happening.
And they could be, right?
And, look, the Vikings look like a bad team, but are they going to stay terrible? They play them next week. That's going to be a Vikings team one way or the other, basically fighting for its playoff lives, which isn't a fun matchup. I don't know that it's not a – it's certainly winnable, but it's not a cakewalk. It's not like getting the Jets or Philly or, you know, Detroit or Washington or one of those teams next week, Cincinnati. By the way, the Bengals have been frisky. They've lost by a field goal and by 5 points in their two games, 0-2, -8 overall. Now, they've played the Chargers, who – what are they going to be? We don't know.
Very pedestrian.
Average, probably-ish, right? And they played the Browns, who might be average-ish as well. But when you're going from picking first in the draft, going 2-14, being an abject disaster, I think that's a pretty marked improvement. To be 0-2 and basically in both of those games – if you're looking for decent 0-2 teams, Atlanta might be in that conversation. They should have beaten Dallas. Cincinnati's right there. Denver I'd put in that discussion, except that they just lost their quarterback and their number two wide receiver for the year. So if I need to find three 0-2 teams that have a chance to, you know, actually play much better in the last few weeks or the next few weeks, Cincinnati might be one of those teams because they also have the last play schedule. Now, this weekend, they get the Eagles. I think they could probably win that game.
Winnable game for them.
Jaguars next week. I'm not going to pick them to win that game, just like I'm not going to pick them to beat the Eagles. But if you tell me right now they beat the Jags, that wouldn't stun me. Until they play Baltimore on the 11th of October, they got back-to-back matchups here where they're going to be in the mix. They could be 1-3, 2-2 pretty easily, I'd say.
Yeah, nobody's saying they're good. But if the expectation is they'll just, you know, they'll rip their uniform and just have to, you know, not even be able to field a team, that's not the case. They're okay. They're going to finish 5-11 probably, but they'll be in games, whereas last year there were only a handful of games they were actually in at any point. You know what I mean? They were just getting the doors blown off from start to finish. They are not horrendous. Only been outscored by 8 points, as you touched on. They're not ready to take the next step and start beating people and be 7-9 or 8-8 or something like that, but they're not as horrendous as a team, say, like the Jets.
Terry McLaurin is sensational. I've got a couple of numbers on just how good he's been we can get into next. Plus, Anthony Lynn talked about the situation that took place with the Chargers where a team doctor accidentally, with a needle, trying to administer some drugs to help Tyrod Taylor get through a cracked rib, punctured his lung. And we'll hear what Anthony Lynn had to say about that. I mean, who has worse beats than Tyrod Taylor in his NFL career? As he's now going to watch Herbert play again this week, and if he plays well again, maybe doesn't get another chance on the field after his lung got punctured by a team doctor trying to play through pain. You're listening to Grant and Danny. Terry McLaurin's been really good so far this season. And then you say, how good has he been? Well, 17 targets, 12 catches, 186 yards for McLaurin. He's got four more catches than anyone else on the team, 185 more yards than anyone else on the team, 15.5 yards per catch, and, of course, had a touchdown this past week, averaging right at 93 yards per game. Here's what's interesting when you dive into McLaurin, Danny, and you could just see it with your eyes, obviously, watching this game, what level this guy's on as a wideout. Larry Fitzgerald, after the game, posted about him on social media and essentially said, this dude's going to be somebody. You know, the best is yet to come. He is fifth in the NFL. In average yards per catch after the reception. So if you're looking at, like, take away how many catches a guy has, you know, one of the long-time stats that's been used in football is where guys rank in yak. but someone might have 175 yards after the catch to somebody's 42, and they've had 51 more catches or something like that. But if you're looking at yak per catch, in other words, he catches it, how many more yards does he get? Terry McLaurin, top five in the NFL in that category right now through two games. He's also second in terms of, we used this stat earlier with running backs, right? So on any given play, Danny Ruye or me, we're supposed to get 4 yards based on the analytics on where all the defenders were and when we first got touched. And what do we get more or less than that? McLaurin, number two in the NFL in terms of yards over expected yak and that margin. So all that is to just say that analytically he's been fabulous early this season. Not surprising at all. That should mesh with what Washington fans are seeing when they turn on the TV on Sundays.
So your leaders in yards after the catch per reception. You follow me there? So yards after the catch total will reflect receivers that catch the ball in the open field and get to run with it, etc. Typically, you get yards after the catch per reception. It's almost always going to be running backs because they're catching the ball close to the line of scrimmage, right? And, you know, so you get your leaders are Mostert, Rex Burkhead, James Robinson, Jonathan Taylor, etc. You start creeping down. Among receivers, Terry McLaurin, I'm sure that's the person. Terry McLaurin is, I think, fourth or fifth, depending. Again, he's used like Chase Claypool, who's a deep threat, Jamison Crowder, Robert Woods. So any way you slice this, this is a dynamic, full-fledged, honest-to-goodness, really good receiver. Not just the best here, but one of the guys that's really good league-wide. Does that, you know what I mean? It's we've had guys that are the best of this group, but so what? This is now a bona fide, in my opinion, stud. And I was basically saying, let's not crown him before it actually happens. He was just the best of a bad bunch last year. Seems to me he's taken that step. Even though that's the only option, everybody knows he's the best. He's their offense. He's still putting up his numbers, man. He's really good.
Well, that's the question, though, right? And at least so far, his answer pretty emphatically has been that it won't be an issue. Albeit a lot of what he got against Arizona was when they'd fallen behind by 20-0. But I'm not going to take that away from him. But the question becomes, everyone in the stadium knows it's you or nobody. Can you still do it? You know, Julio Jones and his tier, that DeAndre Hopkins, Michael Thomas group, they can still do it, obviously. Separate them. That's a different category. We want to see how far can McLaurin climb in that next group, that second tier of maybe you are a true number one. You know, that Allen Robinson collection of wideouts we talked about last week, maybe he could join that group. Those guys can still get theirs when everyone knows they're going to get 12 targets, and they'll still go out there and get 8 or 9 catches for 111 yards and a touchdown. And the question is, with bracketed safeties looking at you, with double team occasionally and two people following you around, when you are trying to be taken out of a game by a defensive coordinator, when they game plan against you all week, can you still go do it? He did against Arizona, and that's a secondary with a corner in Patrick Peterson who's special and a safety who they just paid a lot of money to in Buda Baker. So I like the numbers he was able to put up. The other thing, by the way, I saw when I just dove into the McLaurin numbers this weekend was as far as receivers being most open when they catch the ball, Steven Sims is basically number one in the NFL in that category.
Yeah, right.
Now, maybe that's a pro Steven Sims thing. Maybe that's a design for Scott Turner. I don't really know. I just know that as far as, like, when you catch it, how many yards are you expected to get after the catch? His number is somewhere around, like, 12. Like, he's that wide open on average when he catches the ball. Some of that's the underneath stuff, but a lot of that is just in the seam and what have you. You saw him on that corner route wide open that Haskins hit him on over the shoulder in a big spot on a 3rd-and-1 after Rivera got the challenge on the 12 men on the field in the second half against Arizona. So that's something to monitor, too. It seems like Sims is running free.
Yeah, credit to him. Credit to scheme and design, too, honestly. I mean, that sounds...
And to McLaurin taking attention away, probably.
And that was the other point I was going to make. So Washington is right down there, smack at the bottom of the league in first downs. Stands to reason, right? They basically don't move the ball for their first four possessions. Then they get garbage time numbers. But among their first downs, Terry McLaurin himself basically has a quarter of them by himself. Pretty incredible at this point, right? He's got 8 first down catches, meaning it's not just about, hey, did you catch a little dink and dunk and do nothing with it. Basically, if they're moving the football, if they're moving the chains, there's a 25% chance McLaurin's the one that did it. Pretty amazing in context, right? So Calvin Ridley leads the world with that because Atlanta, their issue ain't moving the football. Calvin Ridley's got 16 first down catches for the Atlanta Falcons. Their problem is an offense. For Washington, their problem is offense. So McLaurin having that many just tells you that he's been effective. It's not just, you know, underneath gimmick catches. It's everything. He's doing it all.
The NFL MVP odds changed considerably overnight, and I teased this a couple times, so I want to pay this off here as we get later in our final hour. But Russell Wilson has become the odds-on favorite now to win the MVP award. Most of the books have changed their lines, including William Hill, who's got him at plus 320. Mahomes and Jackson are now plus 450 and plus 500, respectively. And then the next group is led by Aaron Rodgers and Kyler Murray, rounding out the top five most likely, most valuable players in football. I understand why Wilson, who's getting all of the attention, part of, you know, why odds are set up, or you want people to put money on this, right? And we're talking about Russell Wilson. Chris Collinsworth spent all of Sunday Night Football talking about the fact that he's never gotten a first-place vote, even though he probably should have never gotten a first-place vote, because there are only one vote per voter for 50 voters, and we've all agreed that he should have never won it, so why should he be getting a vote from someone if he isn't the most deserving winner? But I digress. If you had to, right now, put, say, $100 down on Russell Wilson, Pat Mahomes, or Lamar Jackson to win the MVP award, who would you go with?
I think Wilson, because what happens sometimes is, A, sentiment, right? Momentum for these sorts of things builds up, and then if the numbers are there, it ends up happening. Right? I mean, he's going to have the numbers. He'll have the bona fides. Seattle's going to win a bunch of games. I think it'll just be easy and everyone will feel good about themselves. So that's who I'd bet on. It doesn't necessarily mean that he's better than Mahomes or better than Lamar Jackson. They're different. I'd probably rank them Mahomes 1, Wilson 2, Jackson 3, mostly because of durability concerns with Lamar Jackson. But you'd be, you know, right as rain or a pig in mud to have any of them, right? You'd be so excited. But I would say Wilson's probably should be the favorite, in my opinion.
Right as rain guy?
Right as rain.
Right as rain. I mean, and we say I'm the 90-year-old. I'm supposed to be the older guy on this show. That's like, I used to love this bit. I don't know. I think Chad still does it. I texted him every month about this for years. He did it on Big O and Dukes, and he does it on CDBTW. He uses just like old man sayings sometimes, and it slays me. Like he says, like, we'll be back in two shakes of a lamb's tail. And I always find that really funny. But right as rain, for some reason, Danny, makes me think that you use a walker when we're done with the show to get upstairs.
I could use a cane when I wake up in the morning. It is a stiff venture going up and downstairs. I will tell you, you know where I heard it most recently?
The Matrix. From someone's great-grandfather?
No, The Matrix was on television, and the scene when Neo has to go meet the Oracle, right? And she is telling him about destiny and fate, and she's like, have a cookie. I guarantee at the end of eating the cookie, you'll think you don't believe in all this fate crap, and you'll feel right as rain. And that's where I heard that the other day. And I'm a sponge. When something comes in, you squeeze it and it comes back out. I'm Teddy Ruxpin over here.
Yeah, I love Teddy Ruxpin. The president has one of those. Give me Mahomes 1. That's who I'd put my money on. I would say Wilson 2 and Jackson 3. Same reason. Jackson playing 16 games I think is less likely than those other guys. But I would put my money on Mahomes. It's so early. I mean, we're reacting so much to two games. And Wilson's been unbelievable, but you fast forward to the end of the year, I'll bet you the Chiefs are a little better and Mahomes' numbers are a little better. Grant and Danny on the Fan, this date in Nats history, plus we'll hit some of the news that has come out while we've been on the air today as our leftovers next. Football returns tonight, week 3 back, play against me, and your picks could be worth $10,000 with the Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. Sign up today at radio.com/picks and just pick the winner of each week's games. No point spreads to worry about, no lineups. It's totally free to enter. All you got to do is pick the most games right throughout the season. You could win $10,000. It's the Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. Sign up at radio.com/picks. Get you a little preview of the Dolphins and the Jags before we get out of here in a few minutes. But we always kick off our final segment with this date in Nats history. It's September 24th, and this will be a date, Danny, that goes down in the history books for this organization. A year ago today, the Nats came all the way back from the dead. They clinched a playoff berth after their 19-31 start in dramatic fashion. Really cool two games at Nats Park where they swept the doubleheader. So while getting in as the wild card team, they eliminated Bryce Harper in his first season with Philadelphia. Trey Turner hit a grand slam in one of the doubleheader games. And then they all sat around on the field. Some of their families and kids came down and joined, which was really cool. And they watched the end of the Cubs and the Pirates. And the Cubs had lost. So that meant that they clinched and they went to celebrate in the clubhouse. It happened this date 1 year ago?
The kick, and here it comes. Swing and a fly ball left center field toward the gap. Robles racing on the run. He makes the catch! He makes the catch! A spectacular catch to end the ball game. And a curly W's in the books. The Nationals have swept both games of the doubleheader, and now the game in Pittsburgh is on the video board immediately here at Nationals Park. And so while the Nationals are on the field to celebrate a curly W in the books, they will watch. They will stand on the field. And the game in Pittsburgh is now on the Nationals board here at Nationals Park. So a one ball, two strike count on Schwarber. Kella delivers, and Schwarber hits a ground ball to the right side to throw to first. That game is over, and the celebration is on. The Nationals will go to the National League wild card game. The Nationals already in a mob and a hop and a jump halfway between home and first base. And here at Nationals Park, the fans who have waited for this moment get to see the Nationals celebrate on the field. A curly W's in the books. The Nationals will go to the postseason for the fifth time in their history. And now, congratulations all over again. Hugs, and the Nationals anticipate a celebration, champagne, and whatever else that will take place inside their clubhouse.
And unfortunately, that would be the last celebration. Wait, hold on, this just into my ear. There was another one against Milwaukee, but that would be the last. Oh, unfortunately, I'm hearing something else. Dodgers to force the game. But that would be the last. No, there's actually celebrating against the Cardinals. And then pandemonium when they won Game 7 in Houston. Washington, D.C. was awesome. The bullpen went crazy. Nationals Park went crazy. That was the beginning of the ride. Little did we know what we were in for. September 24th, 2019. I'm going to remember that day.
A very different feel, Danny, for the Nationals, your defending World Series champions, as they are playing at Nats Park today in front of nobody. 6:05 East time, first pitch for the Nationals. Patrick Corbin will be on the hill, the New York native, 2-0 with an ERA a little over 3 against the Mets this year. He makes his final start of the regular season, and he's looking for his first win since August 12th. That game came at Citi Field in New York as they take on the Mets at 6:05 tonight. And speaking of the defending World Series champion at Nats, you got to go to natsringsweeps.com. That's natsringsweeps.com for your chance to get your own World Series ring. If you want that World Series ring, you can get it, but you got to sign up at natsringsweeps.com and be the lucky winner. Every entry helping to support Nats Philanthropies, the official charitable arm of the Washington Nationals, which does incredible work in our communities. So you do a little multitasking, I'm guessing, tonight. Patty Corbin and the Nats. Thursday night football, Jags, Dolphins.
That's your appetizer. Little Pat Corbin looking for team get right, by the way. ERA sniffing 5 and has been getting hit around way more than we're used to seeing. He could use one more good start heading into the offseason. That's a nice little appy. Get you into the nightcap, which is Jacksonville and Miami. The battle of bad Florida teams. Over under 48.5 in this one, GP. I think it's the highest of the week. Bring me all the points. Let me see it. Let's go Jay Gruden. Coordinate some offense. Get everybody open. I want Miles Gaskin to get carries and touches. Devontae Parker from Fitz. Let's go. Give me like a 33-30 type game in this one. Let's have some fun tonight.
That's what we had last Thursday night to get us started with the Bengals and the Browns. Set the table for a big weekend ahead in football. I'm all in on that. Some notes from Ashburn, Danny, on the injury front with practice having just ended and Ron Rivera having addressed the media. Morgan Moses has a hip issue. He did not practice. Cole Holcomb with his knee didn't practice. And Sadiq Charles dealing with that thigh problem did not practice at all today. Limited, Steven Sims with a toe. And full participation expected to go this weekend. Thomas Davis, Ryan Anderson, and Ryan Kerrigan. On Alex Smith, Ron Rivera saying that he's knocking the rust off well. He's running the scout team. And he's done a really good job, and he's getting up to speed. So there's your injury update on Washington. The two things that stand out to me there are that Morgan Moses isn't practicing a couple of days ahead of the game. That's scary. And Sadiq Charles still can't get back on the practice field.
Sadiq Charles, man, just put him in whatever category that is where we hear a lot about him, and then it's this. It's every time we think he's out of the woods, he wanders back into the woods with a new part of his leg that's gone wrong. I don't know. I hope he's okay. I want him to be able to play football. But
that's early. It's only been a couple weeks, in fairness. Let's not bury the guy yet.
No, I'm not burying him. I just want him to get through two practices. Practice twice in a row. And then we'll start talking about other things.
Why two? Why can't it be just one? Why does it have to be two?
Because he did a practice once, and then he went right back into whatever this is. Because it was a calf, and now it's a knee, or it's a thigh, or something. I don't know. I'd like two consecutive practices to lead up to maybe a football game. Let's get nuts. Let's dream big.
Enjoy the Thursday night ahead for Thami, Andar, and Danny. Grant Paulson saying so long. If you missed any part of our show today, you can always go to grantanddanny.com/audio or thefandc.com to get any of our segments podcasted. A couple of good guest spots today, including our conversation with Kevin Kugler, going to be on the call of the game. Danny, why don't you send the people out of here and start?
Dukes is up next. Baseball tonight and foosball later on. Have fun.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.